What's your thoughts on the future of money?
It's changing a lot, man, and I think that if you're not with it, you're going to get left behind.
Property expert Teo Oguntonade.
There just needs to be more done to assist people.
If you did manage to go mortgage free, what would you do?
How'd you get on TV though? How did that happen?
The TV story is a big bit about you don't know who's watching, and a production company had seen the content. Yeah, they literally just liked me. They said, look, we think you could be great for television. Asking questions is a hack of life. Like, you really need to be leaning on people that know what they're doing, and you can learn from their mistakes, so you don't have to make the same mistakes they did.
How much did it help you in your business as a property investor, studying economics, and be real?
Nah, not much.
Really?
Nah, man, you gotta be.
That's disappointing, man.
So, Teo, great to connect with you, brother.
Good to connect with you, man, always.
So, you've been TV, buying houses, educating people, also studied economics. What was that like?
Yeah, economics, uni is crazy, isn't it? Because you don't know what your ROI in uni is going to be. But I think that with university in particular, a lot of it is just like your life lessons. It's like a test run on life uni, isn't it? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
But I think that the way that uni kicked in for me and kind of like aligned with property is that when I was in uni, I used to love to buy cars. Like, I used to, every single summer, I'd stay back when everyone go home. I'd save up, buy a new car. But obviously, with cars, they go down in value, innit? So when I came out of uni, I sold my TT and I said, what am I going to buy? And I'm like, economics student, let me buy something that goes up in value. And crazy enough, that's how I got into property.
You were 22 when you bought your first house.
Yeah, 22 when I bought
how
my first house.
How did you finance that then? By selling your car?
Yeah, sold my car, but also had savings as well. I think I was of the mindset as well, because when you're in uni, you pay for everything, innit? Do you know what I'm trying to say? So when I came out of uni, I had a real job. I worked at Enterprise Rent a Car. As like a sales rep, basically. So, but I'm making a lot more money than I would make part-time at uni or doing telesales and so on and so forth. So I had that income. But I think one thing that helped as well, and I think that tells part of my story as well, is that I became a mortgage broker shortly after working at Enterprise. So I had like the education, which is key.
Yeah.
I'm helping people buy homes every single week.
Okay.
At a high volume.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized that, do you know what? Don't get me wrong, money's a big part of the property game, but education is a big part of it too.
Right.
So when I got on, and I was only your mortgage broker for a year and a half, continued investing in property while working in banking, but I started creating content and creating content with my wife as well to show people that, do you know what? A lot.
How'd you get on TV though? How did that happen?
Funny story. So the TV story is a big bit about you don't know who's watching. So when you're consistent, you just got to go, keep going for it, smashing it out. So I was creating YouTube content and putting it out there. And then a production company that was based in like North Wales had seen the content. And don't get me wrong, there wasn't bare views on it. There was like 2,000 views on it.
On your YouTube channel?
On that YouTube video.
So
that
they just liked you?
Yeah. They literally just liked me. They said, look, we think you could be great for television. And then they told me to do like a screen test, which is where you do like a video recording of yourself, delivering like the opening credits of a TV show. Now, I've been self-filming everything for a long time on YouTube. So that's like kind of easy. So I sent it to them. They loved it. And then, yeah, fast forward, 4 seasons deep, TV show won a BAFTA, won a Broadcast Award, won an RTS Award. So, yeah, man, for anyone watching, I always say you don't know who's watching, just keep smashing it out.
What are you doing exactly on TV then?
Yeah, great question. So I present on a TV show called The Great House Giveaway. I've presented on other TV shows. So, for example, I've done Make Your Move. That was a digital TV show of Channel 4 and Skipton. I've done another collaboration with Barclays and Channel 4. And I've done a few more TV shows. But one thing I love as well is I get to do news as well. So I've done BBC News, Good Morning Britain, Morning Live, Channel 5 News. So,
what do you think about property shows? Because like the thing I like about YouTube is you just keep it super real.
Yeah.
There's no narrative. There's no agenda.
Yeah.
It's just... you can say whatever you want.
Yeah.
Whereas when I watch some of these TV shows like Homes Under the Hammer, like, don't get me wrong, they're cool, they're entertaining.
Yeah.
They do inspire people to get into property.
Yeah.
But sometimes when you're actually in the industry, you're a bit like, it's not like that.
Absolutely. But this is it, yeah. This is why I'm going to give you something to do in it. Go watch The Great House Giveaway and I think you'll like it. Do you know why?
Go on.
What The Great House Giveaway does is that we pair up two strangers that don't know each other. We give them a budget and we give them a house. And they've got 6 months to do it up and try and sell it. If they make a profit, they get to keep it. But the people that we're pairing
up—that's
not
cool.
The people we're pairing up is like a teacher and a dancer, and it speaks a lot of volume to the people that there's a lot of us that sit at home and think that we could develop a house if we had the money.
Uh-huh.
Well, The Great House Giveaway puts that to the test.
Yeah,
it's like go for it, do your thing, see if it's possible.
Do you know a guy called Anthony Lavelle?
Yeah, that's my guy.
Is he? Because he's a friend of mine and. I say friend, we're potentially going to have a fight soon.
Hey, I see you
calling
him out, man.
Yeah, call him out. Maybe, we'll see. But he said something really interesting. He said that most people think that their problem is that they don't have the money.
Mm.
But the hard bit in property is getting to the point where you need the money.
Yep.
And I think that's so true. I speak to so many people and they're like, oh, I don't have any money, or oh, it's, I haven't got the deposit for a house. And it's like, yo, if I gave you the deposit, you wouldn't know what to do with it.
Literally. And when you flip on its head as well, to the people that say they don't have the money, I say that to them, if you find an insane deal, like 30% off, do you think you could get the money? And the answer for most of you is, of course, you'd find the money. So the money, don't get me wrong, is a huge part of it. But the education and the ability to like build a network and find new people is a huge part of it as well. It's something that we teach all the time.
What were the biggest things that you learned at uni studying economics? Because I'm tempted to, I probably don't know this because I don't really talk about it, but I'm studying at uni at the minute. I'm studying law.
Okay.
Because I just think that, I mean, most people go to uni to try and get a job.
Yeah.
Whereas me, I'm just a massive advocate for learning.
Yeah.
I love learning. And I was looking at the economics degrees and stuff that they're doing. I was thinking, oh, I'd find that so interesting. I've read so many books. Yeah. And obviously, I'm in economics every day.
Mm.
And I'm studying trends and base rate and everything like that. So how much did it help you in your business as a property investor studying economics? And be real.
Nah, not much.
Really?
Nah, man, you've got to be...
That's disappointing, man.
It is disappointing, but you see economics is a funny one because a lot of it is like theory. I think that you might be better off with like business studies or business administration. Economics is like...
But you say that, but you've never done that. I was chatting with a guy this morning, my coach, actually, Solomon Lafleur. He's a champion Muay Thai fighter. He did business studies and he said, didn't know anything about business.
I hear you, but you see with economics here, you could do a whole dissertation on a theory and the theory... Your conclusion could be, it's inconclusive. There's no answer. There wasn't enough evidence and you can get it first. It's kind of like, economics is a little bit like, okay, we're testing this theory. Did we do everything to test the theory? If we did, then...
What it's to do with all the basics, so like quantitative easing, fractional reserve banking?
You do that, but it's a small part of it. It's an element of it, I'd say. Yeah. But I mean, there
is... People don't know that though. People don't know the basics of money.
Yeah, very true.
What's your thoughts on the future of money?
It's changing a lot, man. And I think that if you're not with it, you're going to get left behind.
Talk to me about that. What do you mean?
All right. There is things that will historically stay very, very strong. And I don't want to be biased, but I have to say property, right?
Right.
Property globally, historically, is out. It's been always like an underlying pillar. Do you know what I'm trying to say? But if you're not paying attention to anything new, and not only in money, but in business as well, like if you're in business and you're saying that I don't want to use AI and things like that, you're going to get left behind. Mm. Even if you're in property, but you're not paying attention to where money flows are going, you're not paying attention to how much people are using things like crypto, like how much that's increased in the last few years. And that can align in your property business.
Did you see
as
what
well.
Happened to like Bitcoin when Trump was elected?
Of course, I'm aware.
Yeah, of
and
course.
You need to be aware.
You studied economics, bro. Of course. Yeah,
it's funny, like you need to keep your ears to the ground, basically, and just be aware of everything that's going on and stuff like that can't be ignored. The amount of money that's in it. They said that when Trump was elected, $200 billion was added to the crypto market. Like, ridiculous amount of money. Like, you've got to be aware.
How much would you recommend? Obviously, it's a personal question, but percentage of wealth being in cryptocurrencies.
Very interesting question. I'm gonna cheat a little bit. Not cheat a little bit, but I have to say it depends on how educated you are. Does that make sense? If you're a casual, then it should be anything from 5% and below of your liquid money. But it's completely different if you're clued up.
If you really, 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 really clued up, you're probably just going to go, you know what, Bitcoin.
Well, I'm not clued up to the level to even be able to say that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you're absolutely right. Like, a lot of people might just do Bitcoin and they might do 10x leverage on Bitcoin. So it makes sense when there's little moves in the market.
Mm.
So, I mean, those guys are clued up in it. But for the everyday person, the casual, I'd say 5% or less.
Yeah, I would say 5% or less. I also think there's a chance, and I got a lot of... people arguing with me about this. I didn't respond to the comments I put this and everyone was going, all the crypto lovers were going absolutely mad.
There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of crypto lovers. And crypto's great. Crypto's the people's money.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't surprise me if the government banned crypto and make it illegal.
And this is why you got to, like we said, you got to pay attention to what's going on with money. Yeah. But also pay attention to other markets as well, man.
Yeah. What type of property do you like most and what are you personally investing in?
Service accommodation is my main bag at the moment.
Okay.
I didn't start off with service accommodation though. And that's very, very interesting. I started off with simple buy-to-let. I remember, and that's when I've made my first YouTube video. And something I'm always very transparent on is like, it's when you're making content, you've got to be comfortable with who you are. At the time of making a video called 4 Houses in 4 Years, I knew that there were people that did 40 houses in New Year's. But you've got to be comfortable with the fact that people are going to follow you for your journey.
There's always going to be someone doing better than you.
Yeah, definitely.
There's always going to be someone.
And in the same breath, you do have to understand that in order to help people get educated in this video, because that's what I was doing in the video, educating, you're probably going to have to do a clickbaity title for people to want to click on it. And don't be scared and make it feel like you're bragging. Like, you're making that title so people come and click on it. And it effectively...
But it's not even clickbait.
You're adding value.
Clickbait will be if you say something and then they watch the video and it's not what you said.
True.
What you're talking about is catchy, grab people's attention.
Catchy stuff, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But then give them what they clicked on.
Yeah.
So what do you do then? So right now you're buying properties and then just renting them out as serviced accommodation.
Yeah. So a lot of my existing portfolio I converted to serviced accommodation.
Yeah.
You know, we've been in the game for a while, so things have been changing.
Yeah, big time. Yeah.
So you've got to move with the market. And I think that's the key thing about property investor. You've got to change what you're doing. And then I also got a rent-to-rent portfolio as well that I do with serviced accommodation. And then with the serviced accommodation, sometimes I might pivot to supported living or social housing, basically, depending on the demand, effectively.
I've got a rent-to-rent portfolio as well.
Yeah.
I think and some people think that rent-to-rents gets a bit of a bad shtick, actually.
It does, because there's no ownership around it. But at the same time, I think, especially for people that owned first and then went to rent-to-rent, it's kind of like, we know the cash flow on this is...
Yeah, it's good.
The cash flow, this is too good to ignore. So yeah, I built my rent-to-rent portfolio after I bought, but even when I built my rent-to-rent portfolio, I'll be the first to admit that I was thinking maybe I should have built this earlier.
Yeah.
Maybe I should have built it alongside the portfolio that I was buying, like simultaneously from the get-go.
Yeah, where are you doing your rent-to-service accommodations?
So rent-to-service accommodation is typically in Kent and South East London.
So you're not in Greater London?
No. So in South East London, but not really like...
What do you think about the restrictions in London with serviced accommodation? Do you think it's good, bad? Do you think it's going to spread out? Do you think it's going to become nationwide? How does it affect you in your business?
So it doesn't affect my business in particular because, like I say, I'm kind of like on the South East and Kent effectively.
Sure.
However, generally speaking, I always give HMO as an example because I know you're in HMOs as well. Yeah. When they came in heavy on legislation around HMOs, it was a panic moment. But with all property investors that last the test of time, they know how to pivot. They know how to adjust things. And if you do things properly, a lot of the time you can abide by the legislation.
Right.
And then what happens after time is that it kind of just shakes out all of the charlatans from the industry. And then anybody that has a HMO within an Article 4 area already right now, they're laughing.
Right.
You've got gold, basically.
Yeah.
Like, you're literally laughing. So the same thing with serviced accommodation. So long as you're doing things correctly, a lot of the time that when they do, because they're talking about making it spread out in other areas and stuff like that, so long as you're doing things properly, you can last the test of time.
It's right. And there's no reason why they wouldn't potentially give grandfather rights with serviced accommodation in the same way as they did with HMOs.
Absolutely.
Article 4. And I think it's interesting because the Conservative Party were very much banging on about bringing in legislation. It was under consultation for a long time. But Labour haven't mentioned it at all. It might be a couple of years and then people are worried about what could happen, and meanwhile other people are out there making money.
Mate, we, like I say, for people that have been in the game for a long time, we know these things take ages to get over the line.
Often.
If you're hearing about it today, probably you're looking at 2 years before.
Apart from,
it even looks like it's...
Unless it's stamp duty increase.
Yeah.
Then you hear about it today and it happens tomorrow.
They took the mic with that one.
The
budget announcement was like at 12:30. So they're basically saying, if you're not completing in the next 4 hours, forget it.
Mate, I had so many people that had properties that were supposed to complete the following day and they got hit with the extra stamp duty.
It was nasty as well. I can't lie to you, because most completions take place on a Friday. And they did it on a Wednesday and said, if you're not complete by Thursday,
forget it. So
at least give us a week.
There would have been so many people looking to complete on Friday.
I know there were.
And it's gone up by, in some cases, it's gone up by like 8K, 7K.
Mate,
it's crazy.
Now, if you buy a house now for 200 grand, which is like very cheap, especially in London and Hampton, you're getting hit with 10 grand stamp.
Nuts.
Which is absolutely mad. They also, about 6 months ago, scrapped the holiday relief, didn't they? That was another blow. And multiple dwelling relief.
Yeah. Furnished holiday letters hit me a little bit, man. Because
yeah, it did,
I think
yeah.
Because I've got some properties in my personal name as well. Obviously, for tax purposes, it's a lot better when you've got them in a limited company.
But pros and cons, though.
Some of them are really old. And that's why they were in my personal name. So furnished holiday let helped me out a lot with those ones in my personal name, because I basically get to circumvent them tax rules. But again, it was a preferential tax treatment, and now we've been brought in line with everybody else, so it's kind of like,
yeah, but everyone else has got it rough with that, with section 21. It's not a nice tax at all. Section 24, sorry. So with Focus, you've got your rent to rents housing associations, you're buying properties. What would you say your main kind of focus is, or do you not? Do you diversify and do you like having it like that?
So I diversify and I like having it like that, but I would go as far as saying that my main focus is literally helping people. And it sounds crazy to say, but my first video was 4 houses in 4 years. Yeah, when I started making content, it slowed down my own property acquisitions. I have to say it did, but sometimes it's worth chasing your passion. And my passion has always been helping other people. And over time, I've learned that it's not only in property as well. It's in anything that I can help people with. So I can take my time speaking to a young person about employment. And I regularly, quarterly do like a free speaking engagement for a charity called 2020 Levels, which is just for young, underprivileged graduates that just need some direction on where to go. And while the delivery is on property, I'm always trying to drop life lessons in there as well, just to show people how to be. Like, I'm always telling people like little gems, but like sometimes I always say in our community, sometimes being a beggar is holding you back, when really what you should be doing is networking, asking people how they can help you. Asking questions is a hack of life. Like, you really need to be leaning on people that know what they're doing, and you can learn from their mistakes, so you don't have to make the same mistakes they did. So yeah, I would say that our main thing is kind of like the education piece, because that's how everything came about as well. When I say everything after our own property journey, but things like television, things like news, things like brand deals, all of these things came because we created a platform called Bricks with Tips, where we were like, do you know what? We're going to give you free value on how to better your lives and your family lives through property and just financial education. So I'd say that is the crux of everything that we do. And don't get me wrong, we've done a few other bits, but that is like the core. Everything stems from that.
Do you invest overseas at all?
Not at the moment, no. If I did, maybe Dubai.
Okay.
Maybe Ghana. I'm actually from Nigeria, but okay. I will say maybe Ghana.
You know, I've got investments in Ghana.
Nice. And I wouldn't do Nigeria right now, because a lot of my...
I know, a lot of people making good money in Nigeria.
They are, but with Nigeria, you need people on ground.
Yeah, of course. I do have people everywhere, on ground. Everywhere. Yeah. If you're not investing in the... Even in the UK. If you're investing in the UK, you don't live there. You need people.
A trusted agent and whatnot.
I think so.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think so. Do you have staff in the UK, or do you just use management companies? Like, how do you systemize it?
So I've got a virtual assistant for where service accommodation is concerned. I've got a virtual assistant. If anyone that does SA, you know that your cleaner is basically, when it comes to SA, your cleaner is basically your property manager as well.
Yeah,
they're the only ones that see the property basically.
Yeah.
So even when it comes to, I know like Airbnb brought in that verification thing where you got to write the number on the piece of paper and that. Yeah. My cleaners did everything, because when they're an Airbnb cleaner, they understand that they're part of the business as well, basically.
Mm.
With any other properties that I've got that are not on Airbnb, I self-manage them.
Really?
Yeah.
How much time on average does it take you per week to manage one property?
Not a lot of time, not hardly any time at all.
An hour, 10 hours?
For my properties that are left on buy to let, I must be spending like 15 minutes per week on a property, if that.
On buy to let or on SA?
For my ones that are on buy to let, for my ones that are on SA, maybe about across the whole portfolio, rent to rent, and the ones that I own, maybe about 3 hours a week. But it's literally for my phone.
That's systemized,
man. And that's if they have any messages after the... automated messages.
So you don't have a manager, you have cleaners.
Cleaners.
Channel manager?
Channel, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
Who do you use?
Uplisting.
Okay, good.
Yeah, because Uplisting has so many things in it as well. Automated messages, a check-in ID, taking deposits.
Have you tried other ones or?
I haven't, I'll be honest. We've got a good relationship with the Uplisting people as well.
We love Uplisting.
Yeah, we love Uplisting.
We have Avivo kind of as our preferred supplier.
Okay, yeah.
And then Uplisting as well.
Yeah.
Uplisting are good.
Sometimes I tell people, because we actually help people get into service accommodation as well. And some of the things I say to them is that, okay, cool. I bought a property in Hull in February 2023. That property is on service accommodation. Since I bought it, I haven't been back up there to the property. Yeah, because it's just systems
right. And
staff, basically. And you can use all of the tools. I don't need to. I've got Lockbox up there, but whether it's Keyness, whether it's Price Labs, whether it's Turno, whether it's Uplisting or Avivo, all of these different things, they can all help you manage it. So like some of the messages, I actually had to go in and actually actively work on it, is that sometimes you have to guess this particular certain thing. So they've seen the automated message, but they're like, oh, is it a quiet area? And I might answer that, or my VA might answer it. And that's the kind of things that I might do, basically. So,
what's people's biggest problem, mindset-wise, about being successful, getting into property? Maybe they see you and they're like inspired, but what do you think holds people back the most?
It's all the typical things that comes into being someone who does business in general, right? They just need to overcome. Sometimes they need proof of concept, but they just need to overcome their fears. And they need to be comfortable with the fact that any business takes risk as well. So for example, sometimes people talk about service accommodation, yeah? And they'll say that, how do I know that this is going to let out on a nightly rate? But the person that asked that question is comfortable with buy-to-let. And I say, imagine if someone asked you, you're buying a buy-to-let in this area, how do I know that I'm going to get a tenant? They said, yeah, that's a crazy question. I said, that's how I feel when you're asking me about surface accommodation.
That's true.
That's how I feel when you're asking me
bro,
about
it. Bro, the difference is with buy-to-let is if you've got a tenant that doesn't pay, you're talking months.
Yep.
Whereas with service accommodation, I have more headaches with my buy-to-let property.
Of course, always.
Than my service accommodation. And I've had a lot more service accommodation units now.
Yeah, always, always. And there's the thing about service accommodation, sorry to say that, if you do have a problem, it's going to end. Because they got another home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They got another home.
And because this is not their home, yeah. They don't have rights.
Yeah, they don't have rights either. Yeah, they don't, you can get, tell them to get off your property. Like, there's the.
Or you can come with a chainsaw.
Literally.
You know, they have to leave. If they're not paying, they are trespassing.
Literally. And I think that's why a lot of people are getting into it, because it's a short let agreement. You sign a contract. There's no AST. There's no reason that they should stay there. If you wanted to enforce it, you can get them out.
Playing devil's advocate then. People say that, I've heard a lot of people arguing that serviced accommodation and people like us are bad for the economy because there's a massive shortage of houses. And what we're doing is we're renting houses that should be tenants, first time buyers. We're renting houses and then we're using them as short stay lets, therefore removing homes to the country.
Yeah, I mean, to those people, a lot of the time it's because you'll get judgment if you're profiting from it. Do you get what I'm trying to say? But whenever you profit from something, it's where you added value and where there was a demand for something. So what a lot of people don't know is that when it comes to service accommodation, a lot of the people that are staying might just be contractors that are working in the area. So it's kind of like, so for example, I've got a lot of units in Kent and a lot of people that stay in my units, they're working on Thames Barrier. So it's like, where are these people going to stay otherwise? We're actually providing a service for them. And the funny thing is with a lot of these things as well, if we were a government entity, or a corporate entity, you wouldn't face that scrutiny. It's because you're an individual, basically. Once again, when it comes to service accommodation, as you know, a lot of us pivot into maybe switching that property to social housing or switching that property to supported living or temporary accommodation. And this is serving an area where the government's literally on its knees and they're failing to kind of serve these people. We're the only ones that can do it. Because you know when temporary accommodation or supported living comes, sometimes it can be like that. All right, cool, I got a mum and two kids that need a place immediately. It's like a buy-to-let landlord can't serve that because they'd have to evict the tenant. That's going to take 6 months if you're lucky. Do you get what I'm trying to say? Whereas when it comes to service accommodation, it's like, oh yeah, no problem. 48 hours, I'm free. I'll cancel the rest of my diary or move them into another unit and that unit can be free. And I'm saying that from experience because those are some of the people that are staying in my properties that were service accommodation first.
I totally agree. For me, money is a certificate of thanks. And wherever you're making money, you're adding value.
Yep.
And ultimately, you can always try and people try and point the finger and make people the bad guys that are making money. But the person that makes the most money is generally the person that's adding the most value. What do you think of Keir Starmer then?
It's a thing whereby no matter who's in power, once again, with property investors, you just got to learn how to pivot. I just know that any change just means that I have to change as well, basically.
Yeah.
With some of the things that come in place, increase in stamp duty, obviously that's going to change opinions, but we'll always see a shift in the market. What I think is going to happen is in the short term, maybe some investors are going to pull back, but what the smart investors are going to do, they're just going to start giving in low offers, basically.
Yeah.
And some of them will cut through as well. But I think that after a while, the effects of that will wear off because the effects of the 3% surcharge wore off. It just became part of parcel, right? It hurts, does. But it did become part of parcel.
You know what I think is going to happen, though? I think that more and more people are going to start doing, number one, getting into commercial property.
Yeah.
Investing in commercial properties where stamp duty is much, much, much lower. And also buying properties that are inhabitable.
Yeah.
Where, again, you're saving massively on stamp duty. So, in fact, it was almost, for me, the nail in the coffin against normal buy-to-let.
Mm.
Last month, if you bought a house for 300 grand, which is the average house in the UK, and rented it for £1,000 a month, which is the average rent, you ain't making money.
Not at all.
Now, you're losing money.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because of the stamp duty. So I think, again, pivoting,
yeah.
I think people are going to be forced to do, but it will be interesting.
It's interesting because Labour coming into power is also presenting an opportunity for rent-to-rent operators as well, because landlords in the buy-to-let game, specifically buy-to-let game, they're either exiting the market or they're looking for companies to let to, basically.
Yeah. The Renters Reform Act, that's going to make people not want to rent their property out.
Yeah. Because a huge part of ownership, in any case, is that you have ownership and you have control. And every single year, more control is being taken over something that you own. So they're kind of thinking that, like, where can I retain that? Or should I get rid of the asset altogether?
Yeah. Yeah. What are you most excited about at the moment then? You got your TV, inspiring people, showing people the way. You got your different businesses, controlling, buying. What are you most excited about?
Yeah, I think just conquering different media spaces. I think just getting the message out there. I'm most big about changing lives, man. And I think that we're lucky enough that we've been able to do that through our platform, Bricks with Tips, and also through our program, Service Accommodation Success. And I think that just more and more of that, because we're actually getting to see people's lives being changed. And whether that's me helping someone buy their first home, or me helping someone build a rent-to-rent portfolio, we're seeing lives change.
And why do you think so many rich people and people that have made it and been successful, that they kind of hide away? And that's most people. Most people that break out of the rat race or break out of poverty and get to the top, they then kind of hide away, live a quiet life. Yeah. They're not on YouTube doing videos. They're not.
I know the answer to it. It's British culture. Unfortunately, it's just British culture. I always give the example, right? Samuel, if someone came in here and they were from Britain and they were a best-selling author, we have a 30-minute conversation with them. We wouldn't know they're a best-selling author. If someone from America came in, we know in the first 2 minutes. Am I right?
Yeah,
because America's got that American dream, basically. So they're very comfortable saying what they've done and how they're trying to get to where they want. Whereas in British culture, we're all very not trying to show anyone. And it's seen everywhere, right? Even in like football, like footballers don't want to, we can see their salary on paper, but they're still trying to appear that they're not making that much money.
Celebrities, man.
Yeah, yeah.
The celebrities, man. Trying to be relatable.
Yeah.
It's like, or in lockdown, crying in their mansion. Oh, it's so hard. Yeah, what are you talking about? But I'll just say it as it is. I'll be like, we're in lockdown, but I got a swimming pool. And then people hate. So these people are just desperate to...
Yeah, it's a British culture thing. And I think that it's something that you just got to know it exists, right? I saw a tweet the other day. It's a race to the bottom mentality. But you just got to try and break out of that. And one of the best ways to break out of that is just surround your circle with people that are aspirational, people that do want to make a difference, people that celebrate these things.
But 100%. But then at the same time, when you're putting yourself out there... I mean, I don't know if you have you dealt with criticism. How do you deal with that? Do you take it personal?
You block it out. It's very easy to take it personal, but you block it out. It's like I've dealt with criticism. So, for example, the Great House Giveaway is done on daytime television, so that's a daytime show. So a lot of the people that are watching it might not be in work or they might have retired. So, bro, I'll get random DMs like, "It's dirty, not dirty." It's like, bro. This guy from South London, like.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, or like sometimes if you speak about something aspirational, you might get hate, like, you're taking away from this, you're taking away from that. But sometimes you just got to remember your why. Why do you do what you do? There's more people that are positively impacted than people that are negatively impacted.
Yeah, exactly. What do you want to be remembered for then?
Changing lives, man. And that's not necessarily just through finances. It could be spiritually, it could be physically. I just want to be the person that when you're around me or you hear what I'm saying, you are positively impacted, innit? And I'll give an example of that. We've got a property page, my wife and I, right? And I also love it when we get messages or we're stopped on the street and people are like, do you know what? I just love following your content because your husband and wife with kids and you show us what a family unit's back. Do you know what I'm trying to say? And I'm pretty sure you probably get the same
man,
as well.
100%.
Do you know what I'm trying to say? So it's just that positive impact, just putting that positive message into the world. I'm very big on my faith as well. So that's a through line through everything I do as well. Podcasts and content and so on and so forth. So, yeah, 100%.
That's cool, man. Well, bro, I'm looking forward to this evening. You're here at the Academy dinner.
Yep.
So you're going to be meeting some of the Academy students that are smashing it in property. I'm sure they're going to be excited and inspired to hear from you.
Yeah, I can't wait.
And we'll definitely have to hook up again. So appreciate it, brother.
That's all, bro.